Hey, everybody, we're back. It's the Wildcast podcast. This is your host, Michael Lev, senior writer and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Welcome back to the show. We have a special guest today. It's Caitlin Lowe, the softball coach at the University of Arizona. Caitlin, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on the show today. We really appreciate having you on the Wildcast. We are going to talk all things Arizona softball during today's episode, get a little bit into the Big 12, maybe some big picture issues going on with the sport as well. Before we get to Caitlin, before we get to all that softball talk, I want to remind everyone that this episode is brought to you by Pima Federal. Whether you're saving for your first car, buying a home, or growing your business, Pima Federal puts your goals first. They offer personalized solutions, competitive rates, and expert guidance every step of the way. Because at Pima Federal, banking isn't just about money, it's about you. Learn more at pimafederal.org. As we speak to Caitlin this morning, the Wildcats are in the midst of this massive road trip that they've been on, although it looks like, Caitlin, you're back home in your office. Do you remember what it's like
to be back at home? And met my kids again, you know, met my family. No, it's great to be back practicing on our field, getting a little of the prep work that we're used to heading into this big series.
What was the weather like in Baton Rouge?
Actually, it was great. I mean, it was okay. In the 70s. It wasn't too humid. We had some interesting wind during the games. But other than that, it was some of the best SEC weather we've experienced.
How about Ames, Iowa? How was the weather over there?
Yeah, it's a little bit chillier. I think our Sunday game was, you know, averaged about 35 degrees. So it was a little bit different for us. But it's a good challenge, you know, to win and kind of like figure it out in any circumstance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we want to be battle tested for whatever the postseason brings our way. So really good challenges all around.
I think battle tested is a really good way to describe the state of your team, because you have faced a gauntlet of a schedule. Mm-hmm. This year. You had an early home series against Oklahoma, your first Big 12, maybe one of your first Big 12 road series, right, was at Texas Tech.
Correct.
These are two top 10 teams. Those two teams have 7 combined losses on the season, and mm-hmm. 2 of them are against Arizona. So congrats on that. And you have this weirdly kind of backloaded schedule where so many home games early in the season to take advantage of the weather in Tucson, and then 3 straight series on the road and 4 of the last 5. How do you think that will prepare your team for what is to come in the postseason?
Well, I tell you what, there's nothing we haven't seen so far. That's for sure. I mean, we faced some of the best arms in the country. You know, it seemed like for a 9-game stretch, we were facing all Americans in the circle, and that's exactly what you want to do, you know, heading into the most important games of the season. So also face some of the best offensive teams in the country, and just teams that win, you know, and finding a way to beat people on their home turf is a big deal as well. So, you know, that LSU series was important for us to kind of get in an environment where nobody's cheering for us and everybody's cheering against us, you know, against a good team with a great pitching staff, and kind of figuring out a way to win when we didn't feel our best too on a Sunday. So backs against the wall, we got to see what we were made of. So I think just being tested is so important when you head into this, because you're not going to feel great, but you're going to have to figure out a ways to respond throughout an entire season. And that's what the postseason requires every game.
You never know what will happen during the postseason, but as things are shaping up right now, in all likelihood, if you were to win a regional, which I think we all hope will be in Tucson, you're probably going on the road for a super regional, right? And you might be going to an SEC school, mm-hmm. Based on the fact that I think 10 of the top 18 in, I think, in RPI are SEC. It's just kind of the way of the world right now. So maybe that was a little sneak preview, you know, of what's to come and what that environment is going to be like. So that's a great experience for your team. The Wildcats are 30-11. They are 11-4 in the Big 12, second place in the conference behind Texas Tech. The last of those 3 road trips in a row is against Oklahoma State, which has been kind of a pretty steady power in the Big 12. They are top 20-ish in RPI. I look at Massey ratings too. You guys are 14th in the Massey ratings, you're 15th in RBI. Do you pay any attention to that stuff, the advanced metrics, where you stand, et cetera? Do you ever talk about that stuff with your girls?
I mean, I hit refresh on it daily. No, I think it's just important to know where you're standing, know what kind of games you're rolling into. I think I limit the information that we necessarily give our players as far as like thinking too hard about it. Like this is going to be Oklahoma State's a good challenge for us in so many ways. It's, a really good team on the road once again to play in a super regional type environment. Yeah, they're not an SEC team that, but they're a great team with a great home showing that's going to be a good road test for us. So I think, being able to show up and play our best softball is really important and really build off Sunday. Because really we had a really gritty performance. And just like the belief from inning one to the very end that we were going to win that ball game, was so huge for us. Whether we felt, I think we didn't hit very well on the weekend, and it was just finding a way to score the runs when they mattered, and just a true testament to our pitching and defense to keep us in a game like that, so that when the moment or just came up that we were able to execute. So I'm just really looking forward to the opportunity and the challenge of what this weekend brings.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Arizona dropped the first two games of the series at LSU. The reason that you guys played LSU is there's an odd number of teams that play softball in the Big 12,
Correct.
right? So
Correct.
you have to bake in one non-conference series. If there was an even number of teams, you wouldn't have to do that. It was that way in baseball in the Pac-12 forever. Now with baseball in the Big 12, there's 12 teams that play, so you don't have to do that. But you guys lost the first two games. They're very low scoring, playoff type games. And then you found a way to win, as you mentioned, on Sunday, get back on the winning track. I'm sure that was a happy flight home from Baton Rouge. And as you said, nice to practice here in Tucson, where the weather has been really nice of late. So you're going to Oklahoma State this weekend. You've been to, I assume, most of the Big 12 opponents. You've played probably all of them at this point. How would you compare the Big 12 to the Pac-12, where, of course, you played and you coached for a long time?
It's different, but it's challenging in different ways. And I think, some of the best pitchers in the country are existing right now in the Big 12, which is really cool for us because it's providing us preparation and top-notch at-bats throughout. We have, Tech, we've got Nyjah Kennedy, Caitlin Terry, Kenzie Brown at ASU. I mean, we don't play UCF this year, but they have an excellent pitcher in the circle, and Ruby Malin's no different. She's an All-American type pitcher. She carries the load for them, and she's a competitor. So it's another great challenge for us to really show up and be better from the first time we see her Friday to the very end on Sunday. And how can we make those adjustments throughout a weekend? So I think it's been a cool challenge. It's just different as far as the Pac-12 and Big 12. Like you would see. I remember it was like lefty dominant hitters in the Pac-12, and then all of a sudden we flip the script and it's like righty power throughout the Big 12. So just little intricacies like that. But we've pretty much been, I've been to most of these places. At Ames, Iowa was actually a first for all of us, I think. So that was a fun experience. But yes, we have experience at Stillwater, kind of know the ropes there, and we're just excited for the challenge.
Sure. Do you have a favorite Big 12 city that you have visited so far, as far as, I don't know, things to do during your off time or places to hang out with the squad?
I like the Utah stops, BYU and going to Salt Lake City. I'm a fan. I mean, Tucson's my favorite by far, but if I had to pick.
I have not been to Provo. I have been to Salt Lake City many times. I feel like it's kind of underrated. I'm not a person who needs to or wants to like go out late and drinking and so forth. And I guess that's probably one of the complaints people have, right? But I think it's a very walkable city. There's a lot of good restaurants. It's very pretty, of course. I don't know
Exactly.
what the like they built a new baseball stadium up there. It's small, like 1,300 seats, but the mountains are the backdrop.
Totally.
Like the
The setting
snow-covered
is really
mountains, like
beautiful.
whoa.
Yeah, exactly. If you get a good weather day, I mean, it's pretty great.
Yeah, so you mentioned it was about 35 degrees over there in Ames, and that was a series that actually got shifted, right, from like Friday, Saturday to Sunday, Monday because of other weather issues. What is the coldest game that you can recall either coaching in or playing in?
We played, and I want to say it was 2 years ago. The last time we went to Utah, there was snow coming down, and we were playing. So it was kind of in and out, but that had to probably take the cake for the coldest. But it's again, it's like a fun challenge. I mean, that my outfielders come in and they're like, "What is this?" You know, like they're from California, so they don't get to experience that. And it does provide a pretty cool setting. But man, talk about a challenge where you're just like, doesn't matter, like let's go to work. So Ames had some heaters in the dugouts for us, which was nice, but otherwise the field temps were pretty cool.
Yeah, so I have always found that like sitting in the stands versus like playing, it's a different experience if it's cold, right? If you're moving around, like you probably don't even notice it, that maybe your hands a little bit. So do you have, when you're coaching, you're not moving as much as you would be playing. Do you have stuff? Do you have certain layers? Do you put like heat patches on, your lower back or inside your
No,
shoes or anything of that nature?
definitely just extra layers, I think. And you know what's funny is like we do the opposite thing here, right? Our heat index on the dirt sometimes is pretty crazy. So we definitely return the favor to some of these schools in just a different way.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. So one of the very cool things that happened recently for one of your players, the Sydney Stewart received a golden ticket to the AUSL, which is the new professional softball league. And she didn't just get a golden ticket. She received a golden ticket from the golden girl herself, Jenny Finch. What was that moment like to be part of
I
that?
mean, it was incredible. I think when that right field gate opened and Jenny walked through, it was just like, oh, just like everybody felt that in the stadium, the goosebumps. And we're lucky to know, probably about a month before, and the hardest thing is keeping that darn thing a secret from everybody that it needs to be kept from. So just so proud of her. I think, even the growth that she's had just in this one, last year for her has been so incredible, and she's really just settled into who she is as a person and player. So to see it just kind of come full circle, when she first stepped in, I don't think she ever dreamed that she could play beyond college. And now to see it just, the hard work pay off, but also just to see her confidence level, like, yeah, I want this, I can do this. And it's just been really, really cool. And I know Jenny was a really cool moment for her as well. So sorry to Tosh, who was here, Natasha Watley, which was just as cool last year. But Jenny Finch is obviously the queen of Tucson. So I'm so happy she made the trip back. And we actually got to, in between our trips from Ames to Baton Rouge, we got to go pay a visit to Finch at her house afterwards. So that was pretty cool.
That's amazing. So you knew obviously that Sydney Stewart had a lot of potential, talented player. You wouldn't have, brought her over here otherwise. But did you know she'd be this good? Like she is produced way beyond anything that she ever did up at Washington. I don't know if that's like the weather, the air. I'm sure it's way more than that, but she's become this like force in the middle of the lineup. And her production is like through the roof compared to what she did her first couple of years at UW. What did you think that was possible, and what do you think explains it?
Well, it was a no-brainer for us when she came on our visit, just as far as like the human that she is. And on video, obviously you look at her athleticism and it's just off the charts. I think what the real test is when you see someone in practice for the first time, you see how they work, you see how they function, you really start to see like what the potential could actually be. And I remember watching her taking batting practice for the first time, and it was like, oh yeah, like we're gonna get her there, because most of her blockades were just in between the ears, and just like freeing her up to compete. So I think it's a true testament to the way the work she pours in, which honestly has hit another level this year. And then just kind of freeing her mind up to compete. And she kind of had a block a little bit at the beginning of the year because she was the one that was like circled right on the lineup card. And it's hard to go from being kind of a just a role player as far as like she was hitting with Devin Nets and all these guys, and now she was the one that needed to be protected and all of the things. So but she's settled into that nicely. She's taking her walks when she gets them, and then she's absolutely doing damage when people make the mistake of throwing it over the plate. So it takes a lot of composure, a lot of maturity to be that way. And she's also just been so great for her teammates too this year. It's kind of like that pressure starts to come off when you start to focus on the team and not as much put as much pressure kind of on your individual performance.
Yeah, she also, and this is true of many, middle of the lineup sluggers, that you have to have patience. Like, you got to wait for your pitch. You might get one pitch a game, right? That you can really do damage on. So it takes a lot of discipline to do that. So you've kind of like change the lineup order a little bit. You have had Reagan Shockey and Serenity Trice at the top from the outset, but Taylor Beal just kind of inched her way up a little bit more, a little bit more, right? Like, kind of came in with this reputation as glove first, which might still very well be the case, right? But she's hit to the point that you have put her in that third spot a lot. Where have you seen the growth in her game on the offensive side of
I
things?
mean, we have always known she's an incredible offensive player. It's Taylor tapping into that, and that's what she's done the best this year, is just dive into the offensive side. And it's not something she was ever really comfortable with. If you ask her in a 3-hour practice how much defense she wants to do, she'd probably say 3 hours of defense. So just kind of stepping out of her comfort zone. And I think she's been really selfless as far as like, what does the team need from me? And like, how can I be better, looking in the mirror? And so she's really just, I really credit like her and Amber's relationship and how much that has grown, because Taylor's just kind of come to the table like, all right, I don't love it, but I'm gonna do it. And she's learned to love it in little ways. And I used to see so many times where her eyeballs would look to the dugout for like answers, and now they look to the dugout with confidence. And it's a really cool thing to see, because she's just completely dove in. And she's so different, because I think when people put hitting first, then they get so obsessed with the results portion of it. And she is just really excellent at doing what the game calls her to do in any given situation. So we first put her in the three to take a little pressure off Stu, to be quite honest. And she was someone that was like, yeah, let me drop a bunt, let me I can drive the ball to the outfield, I can pull one, like whatever I need to do to get these two speedsters over, and they make it easier to do your job. But it was kind of nice, because then we got to put Stu a little bit lower, let her see kind of a power hitter hit first. And it's just been awesome to see the growth, because she's had just as much confidence at the plate this year as she had with her glove. So it's a proud coaching moment for sure.
I love hearing all that. One thing I noticed about Taylor is she doesn't wear batting gloves, and she doesn't. So you could wear a big cage on your helmet if you want, right? Or you could wear a C flap. She doesn't have any and none of those things,
Yeah,
right?
she's
Like,
old school.
is that what it is? Okay,
Yeah,
just to
I don't
remind you of yourself, were you like, did you have batting gloves? Or
know.
And
Yeah,
C flaps, I don't think had been invented back then,
well,
but
I think it was my senior year of high school, they actually made the face masks
okay.
mandatory. Which also they added a chin strap to high school, which just took you back to like rec ball, T-ball back in the day. I don't know what that was for, but I mean, I hated the weight of it. It just like anything that was gonna slow us down, like get it out of here. But yeah, we've had like 2 or 3 a year kind of just like dabble with not having it. And otherwise, like, people are just so used to it growing up as kids wearing it now. So I think it's become normal for a lot of people.
Yeah, but not Taylor Beal.
Not Taylor
Nope,
Beal.
no interest in any of that stuff. I can't imagine batting without gloves. Like, that's I mean,
yeah, that one I can't imagine.
On those hands, yeah.
My hands are too sensitive, but she must have the appropriate calluses.
Yes. Okay. So, per usual, Arizona is among the best hitting teams in the conference in which it plays. You know, pitching is always kind of that critical component for softball. You guys took a different approach to that problem this year, more like kind of quality over quantity. You have your kind of core four, and you know, two of those girls, Jalen Adams and Riley Holder, have really kind of handled the bulk of the innings. Janae Berry, of course, has contributed as well of late. How would you assess how that's gone? How those pitchers have performed?
Well, I think we took a really good step forward in our LSU series, and it's a bummer we couldn't back them up offensively more than we did, because you know, it felt like for the first time in a minute, we were like tactically handing the ball off to the right matchups. And in certain scenarios, people were doing their job, and then we'd get them out of there for the next person to go in and do their job. I was extremely proud of Janae Berry's performance in all six games, really. So that, you know, her numbers don't always show the outcome of what she did for us, but her ability to just come in, make speeds, kind of keep people off balance with her spin. She's such a different look than the other two that it requires, you know, our success is based on the fact that we can kind of keep people off balance. So if one of those pieces is missing, then we obviously take a step back, versus this weekend. Really, they were their best selves and kind of sticking to what they do well. And when that's the case, we're able to keep some good offensive lineups like LSU a little more off balance.
I will admit that when I watch softball, I have a hard time telling the pitches apart.
Yeah.
Right. Like what it's very subtle to the untrained eye. And I'm definitely the untrained eye. What is like the difference in like miles per hour between sort of, I don't know, like a really good changeup and maybe like the best fastball?
Usually like 10 to 12 miles per hour. Okay. You don't want them too close. Mm-hmm. And then you obviously don't want them too slow. So anytime you're getting over like a 12 mile per hour difference, you're probably giving enough time for people to sit on your change. And anytime it's too fast, you can kind of cheat through the zone as a hitter and kind of still stay on something.
And I guess ideally you want all the pitches to kind of look the same coming out Correct. Of the hand, right? So that the batter doesn't know what's coming.
Totally. And the tunneling works the same as baseball. It's just coming from a different slot. So you're still trying to get everything to look similar until they have their late break.
Yes. My colleague Justin Spears was supposed to join us today, but he had a meeting and couldn't make it. But he did send in some questions for us, Caitlin. He said he wonders, is pitching a problem in college softball? Seems like ERA is up nationally. Why do you think that is? Is that true? Or do you think just batters are better?
You know, I will say, if you look across at just notoriously really good arms in the game, like across the board, it seems like the ERAs are a little bit higher. And I think for the last couple years, and I would love to see data on this, but I truly feel like the strike zone has gotten smaller and smaller as far as what people are calling. You know, and that's something that we've just had to adapt to. And, you know, in certain games, we're having to pitch to contact in an appropriate way for an umpire's strike zone. So I think that's probably one thing. Obviously, you know, the offense and the technology. So, I mean, hitters have gotten better. Hitting coaches have gotten better. And I think lastly, just like when you throw yourself into a top 10 strength of schedule, you know, anybody who's doing that is prepping themselves for the postseason. And when you do that, it comes with the challenge of facing, you know, really good hitters all of the time. Whereas, you know, you might do it one every 10 games. Now it's, you know, every weekend you're facing a good showing. Mm-hmm. So I think kind of the combination of all of that, but, you know, coming from a hitting person, I think it probably means a little bit to say maybe open up the strike zone just a little bit. But yeah, it's just, you know, you look at Jenny Finch era and then the era that I played in, it seems like it's kind of gotten smaller and smaller as we've gone on, kind of honestly trending towards a baseball type of zone to where, you know, hitters are good enough and seeing the appropriate stuff enough to kind of be patient in their zone.
Yeah, when I watch your games on streaming or on TV, I'm often frustrated But the angle by the strike zone, the angle is a little, you know, it's a little bit off. It's not straight on. Mm-hmm. The one that frustrates me the most is just the high strike. It's just sort of like, I feel like anything above the belt these days is just called a ball, even though that's a hittable pitch, right? A pitch that someone might take over the fence.
So. Yeah, I've seen a lot of it, like watching across the board, not our games, but all games, just like a lot of catchers like not move. And that's what's crazy to me. Like you're set up, you're in the strike zone already and you haven't moved an inch and it will still be a ball. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Have you seen the ABS system in action in MLB? Do you like it?
I'm undecided. You know, I do. I think it's interesting. I love watching catchers call for the challenges because they're just so good at the awareness of the zone. It's like, yeah, a pitcher can do it, but the catchers are the ones that like they feel it, man, in their bones. So it's been cool to just see what the awareness is like. I don't know if that's the appropriate thing for our game. I think it's always been kind of cool to have that X factor. So we'll see. I don't know how baseball people feel about it. Have you heard?
It's people are getting used to it, you know. I like the fact that it's fast.
Yeah.
And it's really quick. And it sort of adds this a little bit of strategy, a little bit more drama for the crowd. Like, and the crowd really likes when the umpires are wrong, unfortunately for them.
I'm sure the umpires don't like it at all.
I don't think they do. So I saw someone say that pitchers should be banned from challenging, right? Because they probably have no idea, or they just think their pitches are always strikes
better than they are. I've seen a couple catchers say like no
but you have to do it right away, so there's really like they won't let you do it if you hesitate at all. So there's not a lot of time to stop someone from doing it. Justin also wanted to know, he said the UA men's tennis team bonds over Pokemon cards. What does the softball team do to bond?
Oh man, we have, you know, there's probably so many different things. I mean, one of the coolest things, we were on an off day at Finch's house, and her place is just insane. But they have every kind of like sports activity in the world. And you'd think these girls would be like lounging in the pool, you know, taking a load off. And we turn and there's like a full volleyball match going with like 5v5. And then on the basketball court, it's like Sid, Stu, and Serenity versus two of our managers, which just, I'm like looking over there. Sid's trying to dunk. I mean, the thing is like lowered a little bit, but she's trying to dunk. And then Serenity's like doing all this crazy stuff. And then, you know, we've got five of them fishing over here, and then they're asking about the four wheelers. It's just like crazy. They love competing in like all of the things. So breaking out the basketball in the pool and the diving board, it's like, man, they just have a really strong love for hanging out together too. And I'm not complaining. I think it's creating a great bond. And it's kind of honestly like, I know the weather was crazy and it's a long travel span, but like keeping them on the road sometimes is just so good for the team bonding in general. So that's been really cool to see.
Yeah, competitors are going to compete.
Yep.
And when you go on those road trips, they can't splinter off like at the end of practice and go back to their apartments or whatever. I'm sure a lot of them are roommates, but they're not all together. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you have that very cool experience on the road. All right. One more question for you, Caitlin. I know you got to get out of here. The rest of the way, you've got Oklahoma State. You've got Houston at home for your last home series. You've got Utah. I'm sure you were very much eyeing getting in that top 16 and being a host. What's your outlook for what's ahead for the 2026 Arizona softball team?
Definitely looking to ramp up these last nine games. You know, I think teams can get complacent at this point in time, or they can really just get stronger as we roll into the tournament. So I think it's going to be really important for us to feed off our Sunday win and just get better as we go at winning games, whatever it requires, whatever it takes. So just excited to see the way they respond this weekend. I know having one last home series where we get to honor our seniors is going to be awesome. And then finishing with a really strong Utah team away rolling into the tournament. So just excited for this team to keep growing. And, you know, we put It's been pretty crazy. Like our hitting's been rolling at points. I think our pitching has been rolling at points, and we've just been working so hard to kind of like be that well-oiled machine where one kind of feeds into the other. And we saw that on Sunday, and now we're just trying to continue that kind of collective performance.
Yeah, you did have like 8 run rule victories in a row or something, didn't you?
Yeah.
So
Right?
I think that was pretty good. But maybe
That was
you want
pretty
to have
good.
that at the end of the season, maybe like peaking at the right time kind of
Exactly.
deal. But okay,
Exactly.
well, let's see if we can get the sound effect here for Caitlin's appearance. Yeah, there we go. All right. Thank you so
Love it.
much to Caitlin Lowe, Arizona softball coach, for joining us on the latest episode of the Wildcast. The Wildcast, of course, is brought to you by Pima Federal. Whether you're saving for your first car, buying a home, or growing your business, Pima Federal puts your goals first. They offer personalized solutions, competitive rates, and expert guidance every step of the way, because at Pima Federal, banking isn't just about money, it's about you. Learn more at pimafederal.org. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us on the Wildcast today. This was super fun. Look forward to covering you guys in the postseason here coming up. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. You can catch the Wildcast on Apple or on Spotify. There will be a video version of this at tucson.com where you can get a glimpse into Caitlin Lowe's office at Memorial Center and see all the trophies behind her and all the cool stuff. Caitlin, thanks again for joining us. This was great.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I can't claim it all. Candrea left quite a few of these things, so I'm just keeping them, nice and cute over there. So, but thank you so much. This was a blast.
All right, good deal. Thanks for everybody for listening. Thank you to Caitlin, and we will see you next time.
See ya.